show.
Welcome.
Me and one Jake Bennett are enjoying our morning Joe, our cup of Joe.
Our fine Friday Joe is what I like to call it.
Fine Friday Joe, the FFF, FFJ.
Yep.
Yep, there it goes. I am joined by one Jake Bennett to review So Much for Stardust, the new Fall Out Boy album. Jake, it's good to have you here, man. How have you been?
It is good to be here. It is good to be heard. I have been sparked with Stardust for the last week. I have done nothing but listen to this album. And I'm excited to talk about it with you and excited to talk about, you know, what we think about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, same. And, you know, I was worried that you might say, like, hey, Gabe, you got some glitter on your vest there. Because I've been listening to this album exclusively. I mean, I exaggerate very little. I probably have listened to this album probably 70 times at least. You know, whenever I'm at the gym, whenever I'm out with the cows, when I'm playing video games, like across the board, you know, just on repeat. And I'm also very excited to talk about this record because,
yeah,
you know, and I want to kind of preface this by saying, like, I love emo music.
Okay.
I love it. I have never really considered Fall Out Boy to be in that genre, but a big part of the movement because, you know, Fall Out Boy's lyrics are obviously very dark, but to me, emo is like a feeling in a lot of ways. And when I listen to Fall Out Boy, I don't get sad. I want to dance.
Yeah.
But the lyrics are obviously very, you know, like deep and meaningful. And we'll kind of get into that a little bit later as well. But are you a big Fall Out Boy fan, like in general or like across the board? Like what, you
I
know,
think
kind of run me.
What's really interesting is, and this was completely unrelated, so don't chalk this up. If anyone's listening, don't chalk this up to some marketing genius somewhere else. But for whatever it's worth, I actually started listening to them again pretty heavy a couple months ago. So it wasn't because they were putting a new album out. They hadn't even, you know, I really, really, really liked Infinity on High. I mean, that was one of my, that's a very defining, like, musical moment in my life. And so I went back and revisited Infinity on High, and I think it was longer than a few months because we actually played Sugar We're Going Down at one of our Joplin shows. At our Joplin shows we like to do like a special one time only cover, and so last year we played Sugar We're Going Down, and I was watching the video, and you know, I wanted to do the, you know, where you know, lick your fingers and do the salute just like Pete Wentz, right, you know, and stuff in the video and do the spins. And so I was studying and I was like, man, I'm going to go back and listen to Infinity on High because I love that Fall Out Boy record. And I think I really enjoy From Under the Cork Tree, Take This to Your Grave, and Infinity on High. After Infinity on High, I wasn't really super into Fall Out Boy anymore, which is great. I think when you can be a fan of something and then say, you know what they're making now isn't for me, but that's okay. And so I don't have any like animosity for them trying different stuff. I don't have animosity for them releasing Mania, you know, or whatever, and Save Rock and Roll, which wasn't that at all. So it's interesting, my relationship with Fall Out Boy, and now recently I'm really diving into the dynamic of Fall Out Boy, because as a band member, they're the same four guys that started it 20 years ago. And that is insanely impressive to me. And so Fall Out Boy is really interesting to me because of that. Same dudes. Patrick didn't even want to sing. And they were like, no, you should sing. And, you know, it's like one of the only modern rock bands that is known for their bass player. And, you know, it's like, that's great. That whole thing of Fall Out Boy is, they're like an enigma. And so I was excited when they announced another album. But like I said, I wasn't super into anything they had done lately. And, you know, when they put out, I think Love from the Other Side is the, that was the first single, you know, all the chatter online, Fall Out Boy is back, Fall Out Boy is back. And I'm like, well, yeah, but they're back because they hadn't been anywhere for 5 years. So saying they're back doesn't indicate any type of quality, you know? But yeah, I mean, it rips, the first song rips. Right. And so you're like, okay, so they're not, I'm not going to say they're returning to their roots at the time because it was just one song, you know? And so
it was just like, I feel like, you know, music is so funny because you have like this foil reaction, this outside reaction of there's people who like catchy music but don't think about music. Like, and that's a tough mindset to get back into once you start performing music, once you start listening to a lot of music and like really diving into, you know, really like just nerding out about music, truthfully. Not this like feeling of like, oh, I feel that this person, da 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 da. It's like, no, what are the facts? Like, what's the context behind the entire thing? And most people just don't know the context. They just know how it's making them feel. So my initial reaction whenever I first, you know, when we were talking about doing this, listen to the single, we had, I believe it was Love from the Other Side and Heartbreak Feels So Good, back to back.
Yeah.
And I remembered listening to the first song, you know, kind of that cinematic. I had texted you. I was like, oh, this sounds like, it sounds like Lion King, like the score for Lion King. And to its credit, and it does, like, if anyone disagrees, like, we can talk about it, but there is a cinematic nature to that song that feels more mature than it has. Like, that type of thing has always been present in Fall Out Boy music.
Yeah.
So, you know, the strings, and I mean, you know, Patrick Stump is a composer, you know, and I relate to that more myself because I appreciate composing music more than lyrics. Feels like I can say a lot more with the instrument than I can with my words, but like you can hear such a distinct style, and this music is so wildly different than a lot of the stuff they put out in the past, but it still feels like Fall Out Boy. So the internet's reaction to this chatter of being like, oh, Fall Out Boy is back, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, they are back because they haven't put anything out. And this first song just so happens to have the same attitude, even though it's completely different.
Yeah.
And, you know, and immediately, like the first two songs, it's like there was a level of comfort that I sensed from the band. You know, we talk about this thing of like, I say it all the time on the podcast about like, I love when bands stay hungry. Like, you know, I listened to an interview recently where you sent it to me, the one for research purposes, where Patrick Stump was talking about, you know, sometimes bands put out albums that sound like, the members all have swimming pools and they live in LA, right?
Yeah, swimming, that was great. Records. Yeah.
I love that because I was like, and in a way I was like, yeah, but Pat, isn't that what you did back in 2015? I mean, good God, you know, but it's like, and he wasn't saying he didn't do that. He was just saying sometimes people put out stuff like that. And to me back in 2015, that's what I heard. I was like, oh, you know, because their narrative around that time was, this is the music we want to make at this time, right?
Yeah.
2015. Which I thought was wild because it was different. It was different than the stuff they put out in the past. But when you really examine these records and this one too, it's like, is it really that different? It sounds more like a lens has been capturing just what they've been going through, and they don't know how it's going to sound. Mm. They get together and it's like, here, you know, Pete sends the lyrics and then Patrick starts writing the songs. Like, that's how it comes together, and that's why there is an element of style that is cohesive through these records, but that's why they don't all sound exactly the same. And that's why you have records like Foley that are incredibly polarizing. I like it. I don't dislike it. I don't love it.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's fine, you know. Sometimes, you know, not everything is gonna land every single time, but for me personally, this album, I don't have anything negative to say about it, honestly. Like, I think it's a really good record. I do have some nitpicks, and I guess, you know, if we're going to do this thing where we try and critique something. And this critique, you know, I think it comes solely from playing music, right? You play music professionally, Jake. So there is an element of, well, I kind of get to have an opinion. Everyone gets to have an opinion, but it's like, I feel like my opinion actually, like, not might matter more, but it's like, yeah, I actually do this for work. So you might, you know, I'm not saying I know what sounds better than someone else or whatever, but you get what I'm saying? It's almost like you feel entitled to give your opinion when someone says, like, oh my God, that sounded rad, or like, that was really good. And you may think it sucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, really? I thought that was like really boring and just uncreative. You know what I mean? And I don't have a lot of negative, as someone who plays music, multi-instrumentalist, I have very little negative things to say about this record, Jake. So I wanted to kind of start with that first. Is there anything that you can say you dislike about this record?
Yes, for sure. I find myself enjoying it, so I don't think I'm on the same page as you, so this will be fun, but find myself enjoying it. I think initially my biggest nitpicks were, sometimes Pete can feel a little Bob Dylan-y to me, and meaning like trying to be this poetic, deep person and maybe not being the best at articulating. Like, I think Baby Annihilation is almost embarrassing. Like, his rambling, like, crocodile tears that are too many to count with, like, you know, and it's just like, yeah. Skip that one. Skip that for sure. I'm not a big fan of, and I get the same thing throughout the record. That is just the best example. I think that's my biggest critique is, like, especially listening to the interviews and stuff. And that's why I love Pete Wentz as like a rock star. Like, he is, it's so crazy what he's done for his band. And so it's nothing against Pete. It's just, I think when I was listening to like the way that they write together and stuff, it's, if Patrick can't find a better way to say something, then they're going to go with what Pete said. And sometimes it feels like he's trying to be more eloquent than maybe he can be, because, you know, like, what is I think it's What a Time to Be Alive, we're like, and I don't know, if we're gonna do a track to track breakdown, I won't get into most of it, but
no I thought about doing the track to track thing, but I want this just kind of flow. Like, there's too much nuance here to really do that, in my opinion. Yeah. And we'll be here for 5 hours if we go in track by track.
Well, okay, so what's a lightning bolt brain? You know what I mean? It's like, what are you... But I love that everything's here but my serotonin and my lightning bolt brain. It's like, okay, I don't... That is just weird. And it's not like a good weird where... to me. Let me see. I can't remember. There was another...
And you're kind of touching on... It feels a little indulgent, right?
Yeah.
Like, lyrically, I thought the exact same thing. I was like, you know, you watch these interviews with these guys, and these are guys, it's like, I very much feel like if I met Patrick Stump in real life, I would think he was super talented, and he would probably think that he was a million times better than me. Even though he kind of is admitting to some of, like, his own insecurities of, like, oh, you know, I'm always worried I'm going to get fired and blah, blah, blah. It's like, I'm also that type of person. I can be one of the biggest a-holes on the planet whenever it comes to music because it's not right. Like, oh, this isn't right, or this isn't gelling. Right. And obviously we're not in the room with them when it happens, but I do kind of get the vibe. Like, Pete Wentz is kind of like, this is it, take it or leave it. And Patrick's like, well, this is what you're saying. You're going to, like, get mad at me if I change something. So, you know, like, I don't know. I interpreted kind of some of the stuff they were saying, and it's kind of interesting how they were kind of slightly hitting the tip of the iceberg on maybe some band things that, you know, where I'm like, ooh, like, they're talking about that openly, you know? And I feel like as a band, those are some of the worst fights you ever have, right? Yeah. It's like, ugh, like, you want to kill that person that you disagree with because, like, dude, you're wrong, right? And that may be part of what the magic is of Fall Out Boy. It seems like these guys are friends, but they are kind of disconnected, right? It's like, you do your job, I do my job, we just happen to get along.
Yeah.
And that was kind of weird for me to see because some of my favorite bands of all time are like Family, right? Like, obviously, I'm a Foo Fighters like nerd.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, like I buy that this person that I see all the time, like that's who they really are. And I feel like whenever you've kind of done what they've done, if that is their process of, well, I just kind of do my thing and you do your thing. I remember reading a Rolling Stone back in like 2013, like Pete Wentz was kind of doing his thing when Fall Out Boy was on a break. And Patrick Stump was kind of talking. He's like, we all want to make a record and you're holding us back. Hmm. And it's because you don't have your band. Like, he's trying to do this solo stuff. And it's like, you don't have your band behind you.
Yeah.
We all don't like each other. Like, we all have to make this work. Like, if we want to make Fall Out Boy work. So it just, it is kind of interesting how the process seems very disconnected. It does. Like, I'm just going to be real with you. Like, their creative process does seem kind of disconnected. It's like, send me the stuff, I'll work on the stuff, then we'll, like, we'll come together in the middle somewhere and talk about it. And you're going to play the, you know what I mean? Like, what's kind of your take on that?
Yeah, I think it's hard to, because, listening to it and throughout and blah, 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 and, you know, kind of trying to analyze it, I think that it's hard to judge the music sans, like, you're trying to make sense of how you feel about the music through interviews, through video, so I'm trying to just judge the music, and that's sort of, I felt that way about Pete's lyrics, and then I watched the interview, and I was like, oh, okay, so that me feeling that way means that it's possible that sometimes Patrick can't find a better way to say this, or, Pete's throwing the hammer down, but I'm also, it could be that this specific record was written that way more so because of the pandemic, which in terms of art, that leads me into my next point. I'm so overhearing about in terms of like your perspective on it. Your perspective might be important and everything, but I'm overhearing about it in music, especially, like, I don't know, and so much of the angst from this, or the, overwhelming dread that the backdrop of this album feels like it was influenced by the pandemic, which, I'm over, but I think there's good songs in here, and I think that's the beauty of making really good music, is like, you get your point across in such a, you get your specific experience across in a way that is universal. And so, it wasn't like the Kintsugi Kid, 10 years or whatever, one of my favorite songs. And it's like, I've never done drugs. I've never abused alcohol. I've never, like, taken pills or whatever. But that's what the song's about. And it's such a well-written song that I am just jiving with it, And so throughout the record, I feel like sometimes when they're talking about these specific, like, being alone, this is not how I envisioned it or whatever. And it's like, I don't care about that. That's an experience. It's not a universal emotion that you're getting across to me.
Yeah. And I think too, like they, some of the stuff that my personal research I did as well, it's like they did make it sound like this wasn't all created through the pandemic, but there were some, it was in bits and pieces, but that presence is there.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like the whole vibe of So Much for Stardust, that whole thing encompasses is of like, it pairs well with the Pink Seashell idea, which I thought, was really amazing.
Totally. That's where they had me as a mega music fan. I crave, like, if there's not one deeper, serious song on your album, I'm never going to come back to it. I will never connect to it, because that's just, I want to feel something. You have to show me that you can give me something through your art. I mean, that's what I crave. And that's when I was like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, then, no, oh well, exactly.
God. And then, like, just bam, 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 right after that.
dun dun dun.
Yeah, yeah.
Dun, dun. Me and my wife were sitting in here when it was pretty awesome because, like, I was playing Destiny and listening to it on Spotify, and then it hit me. I was like, oh, I pre-ordered the vinyl, and it was like outside. It was like pouring rain. I'm like, I gotta listen to it on vinyl. So I remember turning the record, flipping the record. And that's the first song. That's the first thing that happens. And I remember I look over to Emma, and we're just like, you know, like jiving to that song. And I was like, you know, I don't know. I think it is such a – do you have the vinyl by chance?
I don't. I saw it at Vintage Stock, but I saw it like probably on Sunday, I think. And so I was like, I'm not – my opinion wasn't well versed enough to know whether I wanted to spend $30 on it yet or not.
Yeah.
So I'm probably planning on picking it up, which is probably the biggest stamp of approval I can give to any album, as I probably will get it on vinyl. But
yeah, and I'm gonna grab it really quick just so I can, you know, and I'm sure you've seen some of this stuff, but like, so the vinyl is really sick because, you know, I have not listened to the entirety of the record at this point, okay? I'm on, like, track 5, and I'm already vibing with it. I'm already decided, like, you know, because I wanted to buy the vinyl for this review because I know you're a big vinyl guy. I love vinyl. You're definitely a bigger collector than me, but when I really love a record, I will go to great lengths to get it, you know?
Totally.
Like, whenever it really speaks to me, you know? Like, one of my favorite records of all time, Queens of Stone Age Songs for the Deaf, is like, I have to find the red variant. There's not very many of them out there. Well, they did a repressing, and it's like, you know, I can get this thing for, you know, it's like you nerd out about wanting to find that vinyl, right?
Definitely.
So I'm listening to it on Spotify, though, and I, you know, it's around the time I realize, oh, I have the vinyl. So I went to go get it, and the first thing I notice is this yin and yang type imagery, right? I'm sure you've seen that. And to me, this totally works as conceptually almost like a double record. Or, you know, like a double album in a way, because the A side is very chipper and happy and very dancey and reminiscent of the good old days. Whereas the other side is more sad, a little more somber, a little more serious, a little more ambiguous. You know, one of Fall Out Boy's first records, like, you know, I wasn't as irritated with the Baby Annihilation thing as you, but I did have kind of similar thoughts, and I was like, you know, it's that weird, ambiguous poetry that I, you know, that never really grabbed me in the beginning, you know, with Fall Out Boy. And I think just as a casual Fall Out Boy listener, you know, I like some of their records, and obviously, you know, I like this record a lot. I feel like it kind of scratches the itch of all the things I did like about Fall Out Boy, but resonates in a way now where I'm like, you know, I really connect with a lot of the things that they're saying at the same time. And I love how conceptually, you know, like there being a happy side with some negatives and a sad side with some positives. I really like that idea for the vinyl, if that was even a thought, but it seems like it is a thought because, you know, the first 6 songs have one vibe. The next 6 songs have a completely different vibe. But no, really, really cool vinyl. I like it a lot. The one big negative that I do have about this record, because we're going to have time to gush about things that we really like, but while So Much for Stardust is one of my favorite songs I've heard this year, and the idea being behind it of like, oh, like we thought we had it all. Whenever you do get to that moment of, I think I have it all, but it's still just that with that thing inside that pink seashell, right? That they kind of talk about in that record. It's like, there's not really a point to it. So you might as well find something you actually like to do and do that. I love that message. Like I love that theme that's kind of perpetuated throughout this record. I feel like this record is almost ruined for repeated listening whenever Patrick Stump is like, oh, we had it all, oh, we had it all. I'm like, not only did you pretty much ruin that song from me being able to like listen to it repeatedly, now every time I get to the end of this record, like legit, like the vinyl, I'm going to hit stop because I don't want to hear you droning on and on for 30 seconds of nonsense. And I think, you know, lyrically it's indulgent, but also Patrick Stump likes to show off. Like, there's just no getting around it. Like, the dude has a great voice. He's incredibly talented. He's a great musician. He's a dynamo in rock and roll. There's no getting around that. It's the same. It's the equivalent of like why metal musicians will never be taken seriously. It's because the very nature is so self-indulgent. And for people that don't respond well to selfish behavior, for me, that's a turnoff. It's like, I don't like overindulgence, especially whenever it's something that maybe they didn't really intend. It's like, maybe you've been in the studio, you mix a song and it's like, ooh, I really like that hook. But then you listen to it, you know, on demos and stuff like that, like, and maybe you're working on it more and it's like, wow, actually, this is a song, maybe it's catchy, but this is a song that literally I would say, I hate that song because it's overplayed or it's overdone, right? And so much for Stardust has that for me where I'm like, oh my God, it makes me not like Patrick Stump a little bit because it's like that one song, every time I get to the end of this album, I'm dreading having to like go to my phone or go to the thing to hit skip on the next song, you know, to restart the record. You get what I'm saying? Am I making any sense here?
I definitely get what you're saying. I don't quite feel the same sentiments as you do on that specific song. It does go a little bit. I mean, it's almost 5 minutes. And most of that, like you said, is, you know, like crooning, you know, towards the end or croning or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And, but I think when it crescendos into the sort of like chorus, I'm a sucker for like chorus vocals, choirs, like whatever.
Same.
So I think it's worth it for me. I'm like, oh, okay. It's in my head, I just wrote it off as building to that moment, you know, instead of just like,
right.
So maybe that's right or wrong, obviously, but yeah, I think, I don't know. I think in, I don't really, man, I think my favorite songs, Love from the Other Side for sure. I love Fake Out. Kintsugi Kid, obviously. And I hate it. This is what's great is I when you commit to doing something like this, and I think either when you have some weight to something, piece of art or, you know, music or whatever, you'll always find things that you wouldn't have found otherwise. So I wouldn't have listened to it this much probably if we weren't going to review it. And I hated What a Time to Be Alive when I first heard it. And I'm getting to the point where like, it's like getting stuck in my head. And I'm like, man, I kind of want to listen to that. You know what I mean? And
totally.
I don't think I would have ever gotten there if I hadn't have really invested in the record. And I think that's good. I think it lends itself to be a bad thing in the culture of like, you know, Fantano will release his review for a record the day after or, you know, and it's like, I liked committing to, you know, when you asked, is there anything you want to review? I'm like, I know I'm going to listen to this. That one would be fun for me. And then you said, yeah, let's give it a week. I think that's great. Because I got to that moment 2 days ago where I was like, da-na-na-na, you know, and I freaking hated it at first, you know, and I was like, dang, this one kind of rips, actually, you know?
No, when that's kind of like my initial reaction, too, to that song, I was like, ugh. Like, you know, it was almost like, ugh. Like, I was kind of irritated, but by the end of it...
And the name of the song, right, it's like, oh, that's a Drake song, like... They obviously are just, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, one thing I forget, it's like they did like the superstar thing. Like they were unintentional superstars at one point.
Yeah.
Then it's like, actually, now we want to be superstars. And then they had to deal with the fallout of that. And I feel like once you get that in your DNA that you are that way, especially if you don't write thematically or with a purpose, you just kind of let things come together. I think a lot of that DNA of what they learned, the good things of what they learned, like the pop anthems that we know now, right? Like, it's almost like Patrick Stump kind of can't do that to some degree now. And I loved hearing him talk about like making a hit, and like everyone thinks they know what a hit is, and it's like you don't actually. You don't know what a hit is until it's a hit, you know. And I loved that because it's like, then you should just be making music you want to make then, and the hits will just find their way.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be designing your time around designing, you know, making a hit.
Yeah.
You're never going to get true satisfaction that way. It's not going to happen. So to me, I think this record's biggest strength is also one of its biggest downfalls, and that it is vulnerable. And especially lyrically, like, watching Pete Wentz in interviews is one of the most cringe things I've ever had to do, honestly. Because I think he's like, he seems like a good guy, but I feel like I'm almost watching a video of Michael Scott, kind of, where it's like, that was really weird, you know, or like, wow, that was kind of cringe. Or
yeah,
like,
and they all,
like, what?
What bugs me too is like, they all talk the same. They have the same man. You know what I mean? And yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you all talking? Like, that's so weird, you know? And because I get the same thing. But, and then when I watch him on stage, I'm like, he could be a rock star, you know? And it's like, it's very strange. But yeah.
Well, it's like, it's kind of like the Anthony Kiedis effect, right? Where you look at Anthony Kiedis on the street and it's like, is that a homeless person? Mm-hmm. But as soon as he gets on stage with the Chili's, it's like, oh my God, this is the greatest rock band of all time.
Yeah. Iconic.
And yeah, iconic all of a sudden. And there, it just goes to speak to the chemistry, right? There are some friends, you know, I think about like you and I, for instance. You and I very rarely ever talk unless it's about movies or music. But I know whenever I need to have like that very specific type of conversation, like, you're one of the first people I go to because you actually get it. Like, you're doing it. It's like, I've seen your journey. It's like you're doing the music thing professionally now, and you're having to deal with the positives and negatives of that.
Yeah.
Right. I really thought this record would have appealed to you in a lot of ways because of the hungry nature of Fall Out Boy. Right. Yeah. Like, people just kind of like getting out there, don't care what they look like, don't care, you know, they're going to sing their song and kind of walk their line no matter what.
And
with a theme of, you know, thought we had it all, like, so much for Stardust, like, hey, it's all cracked up to be. You're kind of starting to feel some of that now.
Yeah.
So how does that kind of, do you think that might be inadvertently affecting your view of this record? Because Fall Out Boy is obviously wildly famous and popular and successful, and they're telling you like, hey, it's not all great. Like,
yeah. It could be. I think, and that's kind of what I was getting at when I text you, and I was like, the interesting thing about Fall Out Boy is it seems like they have never cared about like being cool. And did you watch the Hold Me Like a Grudge music video?
I haven't seen the video, but I saw them on Fallon.
Okay, those are the characters from the music video.
Okay, gotcha.
So those are the characters that they play in the music video. And the music video, literally, they have to get Patrick to play a show and wear a fedora, or else the space-time continuum will explode or something. And and so it's like, you know, he's like, he hasn't worn the hat in 20 years or whatever. And so that was such a great, like, It's just really interesting because it almost is a like validation of like, oh no, you're like, I'm sort of onto something. And like, because they have never I literally texted you that last week, and they've never cared about being cool, and then they're literally making fun of who they used to be because they weren't cool in the video, you know, like Pete right. gets a phone call from him in the future, very Terminator style like stuff, and he's like, get him to wear the hat or else the world, you know, or whatever. And it's like, so I'm like, ah, see, that's Fall Out Boy, you know? And like,
right.
I don't really like Heartbreak Feels So Good. And it probably is because of literally the most cringe Jordan Peele quote of all time. Like, is there a word for bad miracle? It's like, when I first heard that, I was like, that's from the Nope trailer. Like, It's from the Nope movie, let alone the trailer. Like, is there a word for bad miracle? And I'm like, oh, and like, but they don't care about whether you think it's cool or not. So I'm not saying I like it because of that, but they don't care if I like it or not.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like, too, you know, just trying to kind of take a moment to step inside Pete Wentz's mind a little bit. You have this guy that's very unintentionally charismatic and, you know, eccentric and weird, and he just so happens to be that guy that all the girls like, right? And, you know, it's kind of funny hearing Patrick kind of talk about that, but whenever I read these lyrics, I have, you know, the slip sheet right here, you know, the lyrics. As someone who does write things down just so I can get it out. A lot of times you'll write things down where it's like, this makes no sense, but I have to say it. And I see a lot of that here.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, it's nonsense. It's stuff that like just seemed like maybe something good to write down. And yeah, I mean, let's just read the first stanza of Heartbreak Feels So Good. No matter what they tell you, the future's up for grabs. No, no matter what they sell you, is there a word for bad miracle? It means nothing. Like it, and that's kind of why I kind of give them a pass, because it's like, in a way, it's like, yeah, we did this super meaningful thing, and that's the beauty of not caring if you are cool, because the things that you want to say when they land cool, when they don't land for the masses, it's like, I didn't do it for you anyways.
Totally. Yeah.
And I love that. It's like, and it's like, on the other hand too, it's like, this doesn't make sense. Like, we came back from a God knows how long hiatus in 2015 and rocked the world again and became massive pop superstars intentionally.
Yeah.
So we can say whatever we want and people are going to like it. Do you just want us not to make a record? Cause that's kind of my feeling. Just the early listenings of this record is like, wow, is this the epitome? Is this selling out? Is it really selling out if you're making the music you want to make and saying what you want to say? And whether, you know, no matter how someone approaches it. And I loved watching that interview with them because I kind of got context. Like, as a composer, you aren't necessarily really concerned with what the message is. You're concerned with how it makes you feel.
Feel, for sure.
And it almost seems like, you know, hearing kind of like him talk about in interviews and stuff, like how he's a composer elsewhere, it's like, oh, so Fall Out Boy like isn't your main gig, and that's not what you live for.
Certainly hasn't been for 5 years, I guess. That's how I took that. You know,
totally.
It might be again now, like, but for 5 years it wasn't.
Right. Well, I just think about, like, you know, I have an inspiration is like a hero of mine. He's a composer for a game studio. And he also has a band, but you never hear about his band. Like, you just hear about him. And it's like, it's interesting. It's like, he has to take away time from working on music for work so that he can play with his band. And I'm thinking to myself, like, that's a weird headspace to get into, because it's like, your work is creative and your hobbies are creative. Your passions are creative.
Yeah.
And kind of moving into that, you know, myself with like having to make jingles for companies and, you know, just getting into that space more. I think it's a wonder. I think this record hit as well for me, because now that you look at it from like a more, you know, crucial lens, it's like, this was designed very specifically. Like, this was designed to have a specific effect, and I like it, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, you just did that because you knew you were going to make a bunch of money off me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I like this record because I think it does kind of have the duality of grass can always be greener elsewhere, and it's not very fun to have your cake and eat it too, actually. And for me, that is a very like comforting feeling. Because it's like, you know, growing up in this area, and you might be able to attest to this too. I mean, you definitely can attest to this, because obviously with your musical background and stuff, I'm sure you had your fair share of haters, people saying like, oh, well, like, you sound bad or whatever, people not liking your style, or like, you're a rapper, like, you know, all this other stuff. It's like, if you did have that success and everybody loved it, what does that feel like?
Mm. Yeah.
Because I feel like that's a big part of what they're trying to say here is like, hey, we have had it all. Like, we've been the accidental successes. We've been the intentional successes. We have literally had it all. We thought we had it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. I like knowing that there isn't like this, like when you find the happiness, that is the end game. You know what I mean? I that's a comforting feeling to me. I don't know. Yeah. Like what can you make sense of anything I just said?
Yeah, I can. I think those are the strong points of the record for me. And the it's bogged down by the COVID pandemic stuff they tried to shoehorn in, or maybe it's the other way. Maybe they had, you know, the pandemic stuff and tried to shoehorn a, man, that made us realize that this isn't, you know, so maybe it's an A to B or B to A situation, but yeah, because I think those are the resonations that I'm jiving with for sure. And that's why, you know, the Pink Seashell, Straight Into My Own Muse, loved it. And then he's like, we got to throw this year away. And it's like, oh no, you know, because yeah. It's like this big grand idea of like, what if life means nothing to you, where do you go? You know,
yeah.
If you get to, and then it's like, got to throw this year away like a bad luck charm. And I'm like, I hate that. Like, cause it's so from jeez. That to bum, bum, bum. Yeah. You know, like we already went in. Yeah. Right. And it's like, oh my gosh, that smacks, you know? And then,
yeah, totally.
And then that refrain I think is just like so cringe. Like I hate it. Cause it's like, we all know we have to throw that year away. Like we all experienced it. And then it happened again for another 12 months. We all know, like, yeah. I don't need you to tell me, like.
Well, and it's kind of funny, too, because it's like, if people were, I know you're a big Inside fan, Bo Burnham. I am, too, mm-hmm. like, very big Inside fan. I thought it was probably the best piece of art to come out in a long time,
long
honestly,
time.
Because yeah. it was so honest and vulnerable. Yeah. And it's like, if you were actually doing that, like attempting to do that and like go to a very real dark place, that is the that is the way to handle it. Not yeah. like kind of casually like make a joke about it. Cause I kind of felt the same way.
Right. I mean like, okay, that's not poetic. I guarantee
it's not.
Every person on the face of the planet said, man, we got to throw that year away. It's like,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Tell me yeah. something in a more eloquent it's way. Like when at you, least, like,
it's like whenever you have your food and it's like, oh, did you enjoy that? It's like, oh yeah, there's nothing left. I really loved it. You yep. know, like the joke that everyone has heard a million times. Yeah. And I do kind of chalk that up to, oh, it's nonsense. It doesn't have to make sense.
Like, yeah.
Well, let's throw something from the pandemic in there. That'll get them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like that'll try. And to their credit. Very smart, because people as a whole are so COVID crazy, are so pandemic crazy, and it was traumatic. Like, it's a very traumatic thing that happened. But to their credit, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of things that are targeted at me specifically. You know, my parents are, I know you, I see your social media posts. Like, I know your parents have love each other, and that's great. My parents hated each other. No.
Great.
They did get divorced. They did get divorced. And it's been interesting becoming an adult, hearing a little bit. I don't talk to my mom much, but just kind of hearing like the ins and outs of some of that. And the Pink Seashell thing was really the turning point. It was so funny. I recommended this record to my brother. I said, hey, dude, this new thing slaps. And he's like, you know.
Mine said the exact same thing.
He's like, I listened to the first 6 or 7 songs. And I'm like, no, like you have to listen to Pink Seashell into I Am My Own Muse. Yeah. And because that's the turning point in the record that is like, oh my God, I have to listen to this entire thing again to really have this, you know, come full circle.
It gives you this feeling that maybe you missed something.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love that. It's yeah. And it's like, and I think that is kind of like the film lovers and them, like they want you to speculate. They want you to geek out and like nerd out about it because there is messages there. There's stuff hidden deep inside. But, you know, for me, the Pink Seashell thing where it's like Ethan Hawke has obviously had astounding success. They're kind of stacking themselves, whether they realize it or not, they're perpetuating themselves to be on the same level as Ethan Hawke in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it kind of goes without saying. Ethan Hawke is a massive star. Fall Out Boy is a massive star, right? And for him to say, like, oh, there's no point to the seashell, right? There's nothing inside. I don't know. Like, it was very comforting, because I view this first half of this record as like, oh, man, we had, like, the glory days, and, like, we had some of the good times, and, you know, there were some bad times in there, and, you know, I feel like it tells a cohesive story. And then I feel like it kind of transitions from that point into now, we're going to rock your balls off for the next 25 minutes. And, you know, I feel like it does hit. It has its moments where it does tell a serious, it does have its serious messages. It has those moments where it rocks, melts your face off, mm-hmm. and it's amazing. And it does have those moments where it's like, oh my God, that is such cheese, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I have to ask, like, you kind of alluded maybe to maybe not, like, you said buying it on vinyl is gonna, that's like the biggest compliment you can give something. I agree. I think a vinyl purchase is a massive compliment. Do you think this is a record that warrants regular rotation? Like, and whenever I say regular, I mean, like, you go back to this one very much in the same, you know, I have those albums I just listen to on repeat, like my favorite albums of all time. But do you think this could be that album for some people? Like, I like to ask myself that question. Do you think this could be someone's favorite Fall Out Boy album?
Yeah, I think so. For the reasons I don't like it, that could be because of the reasons some people love it, right? It's like people that love Pete Wentz waxing poetic that is utter nonsense might be like, dude, Baby Annihilation changed my life. You know what I mean? So it's like,
right.
Yeah, I could absolutely see this being someone's favorite Fall Out Boy record, especially on the heels of Mania, where you're kind of like my brother did the exact same thing. He was like, I'm not listening to Fall Out Boy. And I'm like, and what I do is I showed him the beginning of I Am My Own Muse. I was like, here you go, check this out. And I'm like, it's ripping. And he's like, dang, that does. I mean, that's hard. And I was like, yeah, so I could totally see this being someone's favorite Fall Out Boy record for sure. I will probably, revisit it a few times in the next couple weeks or so. Definitely taking a break because that's literally it is. I want it to be well-versed enough to talk about it. And Tyler just put out some bonus tracks from his latest record today, so I'll probably be listening to those for the next few weeks and then revisit this and kind of come at it with fresh eyes. But, yeah, I think, I find myself at least three or four where I'm like, I want to listen to those. And the downside of my nature is I'm not going to skip to them. Like, in order to really appreciate a song, I think you have to get to it. That's just kind of my personality. So
it's a journey. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, I hate playlists.
Same.
Unless it's like a best of list or like favorites list or something like that. I hate whenever you take, and it's such a shame that, you know, Spotify and these streaming services, you know, push those so much, because it's like, there's a really interesting story here. You know, like, this is the type of record, this is my favorite Fall Out Boy record simply because it's the one I've listened to the most. And which is interesting because it's like, I've listened to Foley. I've listened to Infinity. I've listened to From Under the Cork Tree, but those never grabbed me. So at this point in life, it's like, this is the one that wins by default.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like whenever I fell in love with Foo Fighters, it's like Wasting Light was the record that led me down the rabbit hole to fall in love with them.
Right.
And I feel like this record might be that for me, where it's like, okay, if I'm resonating with you guys right now, what were you saying? Like, what were you really trying to say when you were my age?
That's crazy because that's what happened with me and the Killers when Wonderful, Wonderful came out.
Oh, and you did. You loved that album,
yeah,
didn't you?
And so man, you know, I'd heard it. Somebody told me, and, you know, when we were young or whatever. And, but I revisited Sam's Town. I revisited, you know, their first record, Hot Fuss, and after Wonderful, Wonderful made me be like, yeah, you know. So yeah, I, dude, if you're gonna do that, please listen to Infinity on High, like, next. I mean, they have Ethan Hawke.
Right.
What you're saying, Jay-Z opens Infinity on High.
He does. Does I've listened to Infinity, but it's like
so crazy. I mean, yeah. Wow. I mean, that record is so good. There's only one song on there where I'm like, that's not a freaking hit. I mean, it's crazy. So yeah, that if you're going to, I'm not saying that.
Well, yeah,
you know, you have
Infinity's
to.
Infinity's the one that has the one with like, I'm like a lawyer with the way I get you off,
yeah,
and stuff like that. Yeah. So I know a lot of the songs on that record, but like as a listening experience, I have not listened to it as an entirety that much.
Yeah.
So that's what I'll do next. I'll start with that one.
Well,
and
dude,
I'll even
down,
buy it on vinyl.
I will get on with you next Friday and review that. I mean, I'll do a retro. I'm so down. I've been dying to talk to someone about that record. So, yeah,
dude, let's actually wrap up this episode and like let's talk for a second for sure, because. Yeah, I got the wheels are turning in the old duder's head. So, kind of getting back to this record though, of So Much for Stardust.
Man, I think
do you ever do that?
I think that's a great bow to put on the episode though. Is like at this point in their career, they can release something that's so good that makes someone want to go back and be like, I missed something because this is where they're at now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's
totally
crazy.
No. It is, and to me, it's like, you know, I love getting in my own head with music, and I love putting on a record, and I don't even look at the song names. I just listen to it, right? And it's like, oh, I often refer to things as like, oh, like track 12 or track 11, like somewhere in there, I can't quite remember, but I just don't remember names of songs. And it's funny, Fall Out Boy trained me to do that.
Yeah.
Because it was like those ambiguous names they used to have for their songs. It's like, I don't care what any of these songs' names are. I like the one that goes, like, you know. And to me, that is my favorite track on the song, Hold Me Like a Grudge. And to me, you know, I teach music. And one of the things that I always try and do with my students is, okay, guys, like let's try and keep things interesting for you. Like, I want to keep you engaged, keep you happy in what you're learning. This needs to be fun for you, or it's not fun for me, right?
Right.
Because it can't feel like work for me, my job. You sit down and you try and learn a lot of songs, and you can come up with something pretty quick of a way that you would play a song. You can kind of piece together the lyrics, right? Patrick Stump is a musical genius. The way he can pack lyrics in so tight and also be playing the lead. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of trickery, I'm sure, with, you know, everyone uses backing tracks now for a lot of stuff. But even to watch them on Fallon, watch them perform, it's like, oh, my God, that's three guys.
Yeah.
That's three people. It's incredible. And Hold Me Like a Grudge, I hope that becomes the, you know, I am an arms dealer for this record, because that lead freaking rips. It is so good. It's been stuck. Like, I wake up with it in my head in the morning. And yeah, it's like, I love kind of the duality of the lyrics as well. Like, hold me like a grudge. It's like, well, what does that mean? Because I don't want to hold on to a grudge.
Right.
But
I definitely
want to
be held for sure.
Exactly. Someone needs to hold me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, I don't know, I love how there's always kind of like a subtle, like, eye raise to the lyrics. Like, what does that mean? And obviously, like with you, sometimes you go down that rabbit hole and it's like, that
right,
doesn't make
and I
any
think
sense.
That's when it works well, and that's how you get those like iconic Fall Out Boy
right.
moments. But yeah, I agree. I think I think it's a good record.
It's worth buying on vinyl. It borders for me. I see it. See, Jake, I have multi collections now for physical media. I have albums that I buy because I have an old truck, right? So I have albums that I buy on CD. I have albums that I buy on cassette.
Wowee.
And I have albums that I buy on vinyl. And very rarely do the stars align where I buy it on all three. And I think this could be one of those records.
The stardust is aligning for you to get all
three. It really is. This is a tentpole record for me as a new Fall Out Boy fan. And it's like, you know, I'm glad we did this because I would not have fallen in love with it had you not suggested this. So.
What were your thoughts when I suggested it?
I was thinking to myself, like, oh yeah, I like Fall Out Boy. Like, I'm familiar with their work, but I wouldn't have called myself a fan.
Yeah.
You know, I do Sugar We're Going Down for warm-ups sometimes, right? Like, for drum warm-ups. And it's like, you know, it has its place. It's like, oh yeah, it was very much in a similar vein as like AC/DC for me, where it was like, these guys are important. I like some of their stuff. I'm not really a fan though.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm a fan. So there you have it. You mentioned another band that I might want to dive into at some point. So, ladies and gentlemen, to wrap it up, you know, maybe you can look forward to some more episodes with me and Jake. Who knows? This is Wannabe Radio, and we do what we want here. So,
amen.
Jake. Yeah, amen. You know, forget what anyone says about how to have, like, a quote-unquote good podcast. Like, you just do whatever you want. And if anyone doesn't like it, that's their problem, not mine.
It's not for them anyway.
That's not for them anyway. So, Jake, you're a man of many talents. Obviously, we want to take the time to, you know, tell you to plug your stuff. Like, where can people find you?
Yeah, the main thing is I play bass in indie rock band Me Like Bees. So, just that's the coolest thing. So, just check out Me Like Bees. If you thought I had some dumb opinions, check out Me Like Bees. If you thought I had some great opinions, check out Me Like Bees.
And Jake is being very modest and humble, and I don't know why he isn't talking about his own podcast, because unless that's not happening anymore. Are you guys still doing Podcast Is Not For You?
Not really. Life, you know, Pate's getting married, Wes is about to have a kid. We were putting out the record, and so it's like we've talked about what it looks like to continue it again in the future. But yeah, I mean, sure, there's 85 episodes people can go listen to if they want. It's not like we did it for a week. Yeah, so if you want to listen to, I also have a podcast and have a couple episodes with Gabe as well. So check out this podcast.
It's a great show.
Not for you.
It's a great show because it is so unapologetic, and it's the type of podcast. It's like I don't listen to anymore like big podcasts. Like I listen to stuff like this that has heart and meaning. It's kind of like the equivalent of when you find that indie band that you really like, and it's like, oh, like just keep doing this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I love your guys' show. So, you know, whether you guys make any more or not, definitely go check out This Podcast Is Not For You, and have fun either screaming into your car stereo or nodding the entire time.
It's probably like the best review I've ever read. Is that review that you left us?
I mean, I hope there is more one day, you know. And if you guys need a producer, I know a guy. So
all right, perfect.
Yeah, so that's gonna do it for us here at Wannabe Radio. Jake, thank you so much for your time, and we will see you next time. See you later.
Peace out.